There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 814, January 6th. 2020. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. I say greetings and New Year's regards to all the F1 Weekly Familia members around the world.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, former Renault CEO Carlos Ghosn escapes from Japan and is now hiding in Beirut. Alonso and the Dakar Rally. Bottas living in a dream world. And of course, today's special interview from Daytona is with Monsieur Loic Duval. And I'd like to remind everybody, we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you'll want to. Nats, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Well, I am doing very good, and I am not surprised that Mr. Carlos Ghosn has bailed out of Japan, apparently hidden in a musical instrument box. But today I read that he actually walked out of his home because the Nissan security people dropped surveillance, who knows why. And then he took the bullet train and went to this area where VIPs hop on a flight. And the Turkish company that transported him, they are also in hot water. And now Japan has issued a red alert, Interpol, they are trying to get his booty back in Nihon. What say you?
Absolutely fascinating. I love every minute of this, but you have to give it to Japan. I mean, he was under house arrest. First, he was imprisoned for a long time in their local Mayberry RFD jail cell. Then they finally let him have some freedom. He was under house arrest at his beautiful home in Japan, but it was just too much for him. He couldn't take it because this man, we have to remember, has multiple homes all over the world and was always free and ready to exploit all that money that he had for years and years. And let's not forget, too, that the reason why Renault was allowed to come back to Formula One was Carlos Ghosn. And this man, I don't know what happened, but now he's a fugitive. He's a man on the run. I would keep an eye out for Flavio Briatore. Somewhere around Sardinia, you may see Carlos Ghosn on his yacht in a mankini.
Well, I just wonder if he was listening to Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy while he was hiding in that, allegedly hiding in that musical box. But the heat is on. But the thing is, you know, when you have such a high-profile, rich, and famous guy, it was Japanese authorities' mistake to let him get out of the jail. They should have kept him there because I'm not surprised. Do you remember that guy from the Max Factor family who was accused of drugging and raping girls? You know, they did not nab him right away. So next thing you know, he bailed out and they finally tracked him down in Mexico. And so I am not surprised that he bailed out. You know, Vijay Mallya was in India and the Supreme Court of India issued a no exit order on him. And by the time 2 days later they went to serve him in India, they found out, oh, he's already left the country. So, you know, when you are high and mighty, you can pull a lot of strings.
Yes, the high and mighty can pull a lot of strings and request a little airplane, and there they go.
Absolutely. So when are you skipping from San Jose to Clermont-Ferrand or Dijon-Prenois?
Well, it's interesting, but my prison is a financial prison. I am not Carlos Ghosn. So my prison is quite rock solid. And it works very, very well.
You can check in and you can check out anytime you like.
Well, I could check in, but my distance is very limited.
Okay, great, great. So how was the weekend for Mr. Rogers otherwise?
Everything is okay. We still are alive, and this is podcast 814, so people can just leave me alone.
Yes, and what's going on with your hombre, Nando, in Saudi Arabia? I heard he ran into some problems today.
Yes, well, nothing that a whiz man like Fernando can't handle. He just got out his trusty Swiss Army knife, and he did a little MacGyver action. And they were all back on the road again.
I can't wait to see a picture of him on a camel.
You need that?
Yeah, which is a tradition when you go in that part of the world, you know.
I haven't seen a picture of you on a camel.
Well, I have copyright issues on that.
Bravo.
Well, anyway, sir, let me tell you what I did on Saturday. I went to our favorite place, Daytona, for the Daytona Roar before the 24, and even though it was raining, it was still great to start the new year at a great racing facility. And Daytona 24 Hours is a major international event with a great history, so any visit to this place is a wonderful experience. You know, unfortunately, some years ago, we not only had a civil war in the American Open Wheel Series, there was also a civil war in the sports car scene, and they had the Grand Am and the American Le Mans. Well, now there is lovey-dovey. Both these series have merged. So there is a lot of interest. The crowd was pretty good. And this also helped us with our first interview of the 2020 season. And as luck would have it, Mr. Rogers, it is with your fellow Français and Le Mans winner, Loïc Duval. And I had to ask him before the interview, what is the correct pronunciation? Because I hear so many variations. And he said it's Loïc Duval. So over the years, he has raced in almost anything apart from Formula One, A1 GP, Japanese Super Formula, Le Mans, DTM, and Formula E. So would you like to play the interview now or a little bit later in the program?
Let's make people suffer, and we'll put it in as our break for the Motorsports Mondial.
Okay, great. You know, and talking of suffering, man, I want to give a shout out to all our family members in Australia. They have a lot of fires going around. I hope everybody is safe and sound.
They are.
You have the inside line?
I have some texts coming in.
Oh, that's good. That's good to hear. And sir, I also had a nice chat with cousin Felipe Nasser. Last year, he did a test with an IndyCar team, but like he said, if Bordé cannot get a ride, what are my chances? And he also sampled Formula E in a few races after his Formula One stint with Sauber. And the good thing is, you know, when he moved here a few years ago, he won the U.S. Sports Car Championship in his rookie season on this side of the pond. And I would love to see him race in the Indy 500 someday. And all it really boils down to is money, money, money. And our buddy from Days of Button Willow Testing, Mr. Harry Tinknell, was in a good mood. Last year, he was racing the Ford GT with Chip Ganassi's team and also doing the Mazda sports car program, which is now run by Yost Racing. The Ford program is over, but for Mazda, Tinknell will be partnered at Daytona 24 Hours, and I will be there on Saturday at least for the race start by Indy 500 winner Ryan Hunter Ray, who is a Florida native and married to sister of Robbie Gordon. Sir, do you follow Daytona 24 Hours in any shape or form?
Of course, everybody loves Daytona.
Well, that's good to hear. Also got to talk to Augusto Farfas. He is from Curitiba, Brazil. And I told him we once interviewed another driver from Curitiba, Mr. Ricardo Zonta. He said he knows him for sure, and they are friends. So nice to know that. And Farfas is a pretty good driver, has been with BMW for a few years now. The M8, I don't know if you've seen this M8 model they are running here with Bobby Rahal's team, is, in just my very humble opinion, one of the most beautiful and elegant designs of all time. I really, really like this M8. Beauty in simplicity, I call it. Just like the BMW M1 Pro car and the all-time king of beauty and simplicity, Ford GT40. And now, Mr. Rogers, the moment both of us have been waiting for from the dawn of F1 Weekly civilization, if it can be called that. And the man I met and told him how much I enjoy coming to Daytona, Mr. Mike Helton. He is the president of NASCAR. Very kind of him to give me a few minutes of his time. So it was nice chatting with him. And that was really the Haagen-Dazs and hot dog moment of my trip to Daytona on Saturday. So shall we move on to the next item?
Absolutely. After that NASCAR Farfid Nugan, let's continue with something exciting.
Okay, we shall move on to normal programming and the business of Formula One Grand Prix motor racing. Sir, I want to get your opinion on this F1 news we have that Robert Kubica is now joining Alfa Romeo as a reserve driver. I guess the feel-good story, which you enjoyed so much, will continue in F1 paddock, but not sure what it will achieve. There was talk of doing DTM, which made a lot of sense, both for the driver and the series. The reported $10 million sponsorship from Polish oil company, Orlen, I believe they are called, will easily buy a top ride in NASCAR. Turning only left would also be easier for the one-hit wonder of F1. Your take on him becoming a reserve driver and being part of the F1 folklore in 2020?
Not surprised. If you got dollars, you're in a Formula One car. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, that is very true, sir. I am always amazed how people and companies can flush away millions of dollars for bottom-of-the-barrel performance. I mean, I can give a lot of names, but I don't want to do slings and arrows on any particular driver. But, you know, I think people are smart enough to know who I'm referring to. And there's more than one, quite a few than more than one. But oil money has always come in handy in Formula One. But one must look at the positive side of things and feel good about Pastor winning a Grand Prix with millions of Pedrosa pesos. And now, sir, this was of much interest to me. This is actually from the Formula One's own website. They have 5 reasons not to miss the Vietnam Grand Prix. Couple of them got my attention. Now check this out. Bumper entertainment both on and off track. Sounds like they will bring back Maldonado for one race. The other is configuration designed to encourage overtaking. Haven't we heard this before? This track will have 23 turns with a series of long S's. Maybe Max and Ocon can create some excitement here. Surprisingly, no mention of palatial rooms at the Hanoi Hilton, something your budget will easily buy, I think. Business being business, my guess is even the grandstand ticket will not include a meal at local pho. What say you?
Well, I'm not going, but I do like to have a bowl of pho every once in a while.
Yeah, there's one close to my place here in Tampa also. And they have, I mean, I do enjoy going there. It's good stuff there. Oh, okay, now, F1 on the move in a chase to locate major, this was interesting, in a chase to locate major motorsports hotbeds after discovering Azerbaijan and Vietnam. Believe it or not, Formula One is now targeting Panama. As is the trend now, it will be a street race. And guess who will design? The one and only Herman Tilke if this project comes to fruition. I think David Lee Roth should be the preferred choice for the rock concert that has become part and parcel of Grand Prix weekend these days. And this could be a hunting ground for LCH and Max, as it rains a lot in Panama. Would you like to see a race in Panama, sir, by the canal?
No. Panama is a terrible place to be. You could ask Eisenhower when he was stationed there when he was just a wee lad in the military. And he said, yes, sir, and no, sir, and where do I go, sir? And it was miserable for him. It's miserable for people now. The mold grows quicker than you could throw bleach on it.
Now, Somoza was from Panama, right? I don't have the whole Central American history in front of me. Somoza was from Panama, right?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know the classic comment about his father, who was a pretty brutal dictator? He was the president of the United States at that time, but talking like, I don't know, 50s, was cautioned about because I think 3 of the Somoza clan led the nation. But anyway, this is a famous comment made to the president of the U.S. It may have been Eisenhower that, you know, he's out of control. We need to control this guy. A lot of people were disappearing and getting killed in Panama, and quite a few innocent as happens in these cases. And the president of the United States responded by saying, he may be a son of a bitch, but he's our son of a bitch. And there you have it. And I'm not making this up. This is part of Central American, Latin American history. Okay, shall we talk about the doctor now, Mr. Valentino Rossi? The doctor has revealed he came very close to jumping from two wheels to four wheels. A few years back, he tested for Ferrari, and after spinning several times on the opening day, he set impressive times that even got the attention of Michael Schumacher. This is according to a Ferrari rep who was involved in the test session with the MotoGP legend. Rossi said deal was not done, as Ferrari wanted him to be a reserve driver for a season and drive a less powerful car. Do you see a rider going from MotoGP to Formula One anytime soon, sir?
Never.
Never ever?
Not in this world.
I think someday it will happen, but apart from John Surtees, Giacomo Agostini, Eddie Lawson, and Johnny Cecotto all tried their hands on single-seater racing. Cecotto made it to F1 in 1984 with Tolman. A crash and the man in the other car pretty much put an end to his F1 aspirations. He did have a long and successful career in tin tops, racing in DTM quite a bit. And then his son, Johnny Cecotto Jr., whom we have interviewed a few times, raced for a few years in Hape Dos, also known as GP2. Okay, sir, now we come to Killing Me Softly segment. With no F1 for another 2 months, YouTube is saving the day and evenings. All kinds of great videos there, from pre-war days like the Tripoli Grand Prix and to the Tasman series. Last week, this was very, very interesting. I watched the 1989 Portuguese Grand Prix from the onboard camera on Gerhard Berger's Ferrari. Man, I tell you, I put on headphones and that symphony from Ferrari is so beautiful, you can easily forget Mozart and Beethoven. And this was on a track where Dr. Miguel and I were given a lap a few years ago, and this is also where the yellow helmet scored his victory numero uno for Lotus. Do you remember those days, sir?
I do remember those days. Terrific. You know, the irony is I was watching some vintages myself, and I decided to watch Japanese Grand Prix 2005.
Ah, that is a good race. I think somebody had done blowed up there, I believe.
It's possible, but it was still great to see Montoya, you know, all the boys. And Fernando had already wrapped up the championship, but the Constructors' Championship was still up for grabs.
Yeah, man, and talking about Japanese Grand Prix and Montoya, you know, I think Montoya's first win was at Monza in a Williams. Man, that is a fantastic performance by Monty. Man, I saw Monty walking by, and I'll send you a photo that you can put on the F1 Weekly website. Monty was on the phone, and boy, looks like he's been visiting In-N-Out Burger quite a bit.
In-N-Out Hot Dog.
Yeah, it could be. And maybe Five Guys also.
Yeah, Monty likes the nibble.
Yes, sir. And it show, and it's really beginning to show now. But he's an absolutely amazing racing talent, which I've enjoyed very, very much watching. So shall we play the interview now and take a break?
Let's do it. Let's bring in Loic Duval.
Okay, folks, I'm here at Daytona with Loic Duval. First, how are you, and did I get your name correct?
Yeah, I mean, quite perfect. I'm good, thank you. Happy to be here. It's always early in the season to be back in Daytona for the Roar, but, you know, there's a great opportunity and challenge ahead of us. So, I mean, it's quite cool to be here with JDC and Mustang Sampling, you know, all together with the Cadillac. So I'm really looking forward to this new opportunity.
Great. Now, you have race winning experience here in the US. What is your impression of American tracks and racing scene?
I mean, I think most of the guys are feeling the same way. I mean, here in the US, it's all tracks, you know, feeling, you know, kind of bumpy, not so much safety as you can have in Europe or stuff like that, and it's kind of pure racing. So this is the kind of tracks who gave us the the feeling, you know, of pushing the limits, and that's also why we become as kids fan of motorsports, is because of these kind of tracks that there is no way to escape. You just have to push as hard as possible, and if you make a mistake, you pay it straight away. So I mean, and the racing itself, you know, it's always a great show. Here in the US, you know, you always fight until the end, so you never give up from lap one to the checkered flag. So yeah, it's a great mentality of racing.
Great. Okay, your nation is the birthplace of Grand Prix racing and also famous for Le Mans. How did you develop interest in motor racing?
It comes from my father. I mean, he was doing motocross when he was younger, and he did put me on a bike also. And I was doing quite okay, but crashing pretty often. And then he decided to stop and to try four wheels with a go-kart, and that's the way we went, you know. I mean, and then you do some laps, you know, on a racetrack which is close to your home, and then you start to do some races, and you know, I mean, and you go into it, and for sure as a kid, you know, to have this feeling, you know, of speed, of being so close to the floor, side by side with some other guys, and also back in the days, you know, I mean, F1 in Europe was so big, you know, with Prost and Senna and this kind of stuff. So, you know, you start to dream about being a racing driver.
Now, you mentioned karting. How long were you in karting, and any young drivers you raced against who went on to a lot of success like yourself?
I did race too long in karting, you know. Back in the days, I think I did my first car racing. I was something like 19. Now at 19 years old, you're already in Formula One. So probably a bit too long, but also I didn't have money, you know, to be able to step up in race cars. So it was definitely a good experience, you know, probably the best to become racing driver for sure. And yeah, I mean, a lot of guys I've been racing against, you know, Hamilton, Rosberg, Kubica, you know, all those guys are my generation, and I've been racing against them in go-kart, or also Rossi, Maya Lopez, maybe a little bit of Alonso and Vettel, and I mean, all those guys basically.
Yeah, you race against Hamilton in Formula 3. Going back to those days, was his talent really apparent, that he was something special in those days?
I think, you know, he always been really competitive, you know, and for sure super talented guy, also smart, but he also went every year in the best team, you know. I mean, it was planned that these guys go to F1, and he had all the resources. I mean, when he made it in car racing, probably not in go-kart because he's not coming from a rich family. But when he's been signed by McLaren, you know, when he went in Formula Renault in England and Formula 3 in Europe, in GP2, he always been in the best team. So that doesn't make the... And it does make a little bit the life easier, yeah. But still you have to make it happen, and he made it every single year, you know. So for sure he had probably the best package, but he was part of the best package, and you know, I think this success in those series made him also so strong in Formula One, because mentally nobody has been able to beat him. And that makes also a sportsman, you know. When you feel good mentally, and when you are so strong, it's already a big part in the pocket.
In 2003, you won the French Formula Renault Championship. What were the highs and lows of the season that you remember?
I think the lows had been the beginning of the year, you know, one or two races where I mean, I didn't put everything together. We were performing, but I didn't score the points I wanted. But then most of it has been quite high, you know. At that time you join Formula Renault, you're fighting against some guys who have experience, My teammate was Patrick Pilet at that time. In Formula Renault, I was fighting against Simon Pagenaud. He was doing his second year. I was in my first year, and I won the championship. So, you know, I mean, when you do that, for sure, there is much more high than lows. And I have to say that it was a great timing. Again, I was in the right team at the right time, and I did well. And then I've been able to win the championship. But this, for sure, became the moment where I thought, maybe I can do something in motorsports.
Okay. Now, something you did was test Formula One machinery in, I believe, 2004. How was that experience of driving a Formula One car? And even more important, did Flavio try to sign you to his management contract?
It's a kind of dream come true, but I have to say that the first laps, you believe that Formula One is not made for you because it's so quick, you know. You end up so quick in the corners, the braking is so impressive and so strong. So, but then you get used to it. It's something really, really special. And back in the days, I was there with Renault as a French driver. Flavio, for sure, was the man, you know, organizing everything at that time, and with his management structure. It didn't work out, unfortunately, in a way, but that's the way it is. You know, you have to put a lot of things together to go to F1. On top of being competitive, sometimes you have to be to get the good support, to have the right nationality at the right time, and this kind of stuff. So it's difficult to say, but at the end, I'm still super happy about, you know, the career, even though I didn't make it into F1 back in those days. Experience in Japan was great. To come back in Europe with Audi and to Le Mans and stuff like that, it's in something I could not really expect as a kid, so I'm still super happy about the career I've had.
Talking of Japan, what made you switch to Japan, and how much did you enjoy racing there?
Basically, after Macau in Formula 3, I didn't know what would go on with Renault. I mean, I had an opportunity with them, and they were buying me a seat in GP2, but with a team that I believe was not the right one, and I didn't want to end up, you know, doing 1 year in GP2 and not doing well, and then to be dropped from the program. So, and in the meantime, I had the opportunity in Japan to do a two championship, the Formula Nippon and the Super GT, so super competitive cars, and to get paid also, which when you start racing, the first goal, I mean, for sure, it's to go to F1, but if you can earn money from your passion, it's something really great, you know. And I got this opportunity. It was also with Honda, which was in Formula One. So back in the days, I know that if I could win the Super Formula Championship, maybe I had a way to go back to F1 with Honda. Unfortunately, when I won the championship, is the year that Honda stopped Formula One. So, you know, it didn't work out.
Have you developed taste for sushi and tempura?
I'm a big fan of it. Big fan of it.
Okay, that's good. Okay, what is more important and dear to you, winning the Le Mans 24 Hours in 2013 or the WEC Championship?
A lot of people are asking. I think they go really all together. For sure, Le Mans, it's a big race. And to win it, as also with Tom and Alan, you know, which they've done so much for endurance racing, it was something really, really special. But also being world champion in your sport, it's also something important. You know, I mean, few days ago, few weeks ago, we've been introduced on the Hall of Fame at the FIA, you know, as world champion, not at Le Mans, as Le Mans winners, but as world champion, and being in the Hall of Fame, you know, it's also something quite prestigious. So it's difficult to say which one, for sure. Yeah, if I have to pick up one first, it's Le Mans, because this race is unique, and there is so much heritage and legacy about this race. But also to be world champion, it's something really special for a human being.
Okay, now things happen fast in racing. You had a massive crash at Le Mans in 2014. Can you share with us what you remember?
Nothing, unfortunately. I'm sorry, but what I remember is when I left the hotel in the morning and when I wake up at the hospital the day after. Even though I was awake after the crash, I don't remember anything. I know a few things, you know, about what I was talking about and stuff like that, and always saying the same things, you know, minutes after minutes, and switching off and then restarting and switch it off. But now, I unfortunately don't remember anything. What I can say also from the data is that we don't think anything major, you know, any problem with the car. But also, I was not quicker this lap than another lap. So it's difficult to say. Either was something on the track, either I put my wheels on the grass, either I had something with the car, but I cannot guide anyone in the direction because I don't remember anything. So, and in a way, luckily for me also, you know, when you don't have a souvenir of such a crash, I think, you know, you don't think about it. And that's also positive for a driver, you know, not to have something, you know, in your mind always telling you that be careful, be cautious and stuff like that. It's quite positive also in a way that I don't remember anything.
Okay, that's good. Final question. Who will be the first French world champion since Monsieur Prost, Esteban Ocon or Pierre Gasly?
As long as they are in their team right now, I think none of them can be world champion. I think they have the talent and they can do, you know. But right now, unfortunately, in F1, if you don't have a Mercedes logo or maybe a Ferrari, Red Bull can help, you know, let's say in the future. But with Renault and Toro Rosso, there is no way that they can be world champion. But I hope one of them will become world champion, whatever the car they will drive.
Okay. Merci beaucoup, monsieur. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
man.
A lot.
I really appreciate
Bye.
It.
Thank you.
Loic Duval, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the guru himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. And today in Motorsports Mondial, we're going to look at a segment called Amazing But True. Look at some interesting Formula One factoid. There was a time when we had variety of engines during a Grand Prix. Four-cylinder, 4DFE, Alpha Flat 12, Matra V12. Then came BMW with their four-cylinder turbo producing 1,200 horsepower in qualifying trim and blowing right and left, just as Nelson Piquet Sr. And if we look at the result of the 1966 US Grand Prix, we will see the winner, Jimmy Clark, powered to victory in his Lotus by a BRM 16-cylinder engine. Amazing but true, and the only time a 16-cylinder engine won in F1. So very impressive. Rule Britannia, this is pretty impressive. Talk about domination. The 1963 season was totally dominated by drivers on Her Majesty's Motorsport Service. Every pole, every race, and every fastest lap, bar one, was achieved by one of three drivers from Britain, Jim Clark, Graham Hill, and John Surtees. The only exception was Dan Gurney's fastest lap in South Africa. Now we come to Peter Collins' gift to Fangio. Monza 1956, Italian Grand Prix, season finale. Several drivers, including Fangio and Collins, had a chance to win the world championship. Fangio's hopes were gone when he had to make a long pit stop, and then his teammate Luigi Musso refused to give his car to Fangio, which in those days you could do. Then came Peter Collins in the Ferrari pits and saw Fangio sitting there. He got out of his car without being asked and allowed Fangio to jump in, who went on to finish second and take his fourth world championship. Collins would later say, "I am only 25 years old and have plenty of time to win a championship on my own." Little did he know he would not even finish the 1958 season. Sadly, he lost his life during that year's German Grand Prix at the Nürburgring. Now we come to Al Pease. On lap 22 of 90 of the 1969 Canadian Grand Prix, Al Pease set a record that even Yuji Ide could not break. And how hard can that be? Al became the first and to this day the only driver ever to be disqualified from a Grand Prix for being too slow. If only Milka Duno had a super license. Now, this guy from Germany, Hans Heyer, he went even better than Al Pease. He was from the town of Mönchengladbach, which is also the hometown of Nick Heidfeld and Heinz-Harald Frentzen. Higher One sports car races at the Nürburgring, Watkins Glen, and Sebring. He only started one Formula One race, the 1977 German Grand Prix, and even his start was illegal. He had failed to qualify, but joined the race from the pit lane after the start, but his race lasted only 9 laps. Now we come to the 1997 season finale, European Grand Prix. The race is remembered for the championship deciding clash between Jacques Villeneuve and Michael Schumacher and Mika Hakkinen's first Grand Prix win. What was amazing but true was the qualifying time set by the top three drivers on the grid, Villeneuve, Schumacher and Frentzen. All three set the same time, 1 minute 21.072. Jacques got the pole as he was the first to set this time. Now we come to a recent event, 2011 Canadian Grand Prix. And who would have thought an F1 race longer than Daytona 500 time-wise? Amazing but true. According to F1's website, the race took 4 hours, 4 minutes, 39 seconds, the longest ever, thanks to heavy rain on that day. When it was almost over on the final lap, Jenson Button made a splash and dash to the checkered flag after race leader Sebastian Vettel went slightly off course, a scene that was recreated on foot last winter by yours truly and our webmaster, Mr. Toby Dawes from upstate New York. And I think we put this on the YouTube also, our claim to fame on YouTube. Now let's look at the oldest Grand Prix winner. This is interesting. Graham Hill won the 1969 Monaco Grand Prix at the age of 40. Fangio was 46 years old when he won his final and greatest race in 1957 at the Nürburgring. But the oldest F1 winner from Grand Prix racing was Italian Luigi Fagioli, who won the 1951 French Grand Prix at Reims at the age of 53 years and 22 days. This was achieved after he was told to give his car to Fangio, who was having issues with his own Alfa Romeo. The following year, Fagioli joined Lancia and was killed in an accident after an accident in practice for the 1952 Monaco Grand Prix, which was run as a sports car race, not a Formula One race. And then, of course, we had the six-wheel winner in Sweden with Tyrrell and Jody Scheckter. And now we come to famous last words. This is from Jorge Lorenzo, who recently announced his retirement, and he was asked just before his official confirmation that if he was going to retire. And his response was, I quote, "You cannot think about getting the apple when the tree is not already in the ground," end of quote. And I wonder how many apple trees are there in Mallorca, where he comes from. But Mr. Rogers, maybe you can help me on this. I have a strange feeling there are quite a few lemon trees in Oviedo. So maybe next Christmas we can send Nando a Trini Lopez CD. Lemon tree, very pretty.
When I was just a lad of 10, my father said to me, "Come here and take a lesson from lovely lemon tree. Don't put your faith in love, my boy," my father said to me. "I fear you'll find that love is like a lovely lemon tree."
Would you like to make some lemonade out of that?
Well, the irony is, some people don't know this, but I sell vintage vinyl online. And the last record that I just sold last week, believe it or not, and you didn't know this, was Trini Lopez.
I have only one word for that. Karma.
Bravo, bravo, and bravo.
And Mr. Rogers, Nando is so important in my life. Again, not making this up. Tomorrow I have an appointment with my doctor. And what's his name? Dr. Alonso.
And do you tell him to don't let the domination bother him?
Yes. He does know the man, but he said he's not related to him.
But he is, deeply.
Yeah, somehow in the past, the paths must have crossed. So, sir, I want to ask you a question. Oh, this will get your attention. I was listening to a another podcast, which was started not too long ago, and one of the guys on the podcast made a comment that they are the pioneers of podcasting, but the host corrected him very quickly. So I thought of you when he said they are the pioneers of podcasting. The pioneers is Mr. Rogers.
2005, sir, when podcasting was invented.
You know, funny you say that. When I met Harry Tinknell at Daytona on Saturday, he asked me, are you still doing the podcast? I said, oh, absolutely. And I said to him that our podcast has outlasted the Renault F1 podcast. And he said, I remember you were doing podcasts when podcast was not even, you know, well known. So kudos to Mr. Rogers and hello, listeners, Desiree and David Tapia and Steve Fobb, Yahoo Ads.
Click on them. You know you want to.
Exactly, exactly. Sir, we will have preseason testing coming very soon. I want to ask you some questions and see what you think about these things. I think Leclerc will have the upper hand on Sebastian Vettel, but I also think that in 2020, Sebastian will put more of a challenge or be more of a pest to Leclerc than he was last year. What say you on that?
Just one problem. He's going to be 1 year older. And if you have any issues about people getting older, just call Tom Brady. He'll explain it to you.
Okay. The other thing is, of course, how can you not remember? You mentioned the 2005 Japanese Grand Prix. You know, the 2004 season was totally dominated by Michael Schumacher and Ferrari, and then they got toppled in 2005 by your hombre. Okay? I have been thinking that if that scenario gets played out this year, I think you and I both agree it won't, but if it does play out, I think Red Bull, Honda, and Max have a bigger chance of toppling LCH than the Ferrari drivers. And I say this because Ferrari drivers will more likely help Lewis because they will take wins and points from each other. What say you?
Well, that's a nice fantasy. Unfortunately, Toto is a smart man. Mercedes are very smart. They've got power that they haven't even shown us yet. It's called the extra tank, as we call it. Just ask Honda about the extra tank. It's going to be all Mercedes, and you know, and I hate to tell everybody that we're going to be really bummed out in 2021, where things are going to look different, they're going to smell different, they're going to sound different, and the results will be the same.
You know, you mentioned this extra tank. I don't know if I mentioned this in a previous podcast. I was having a long chat with one of the most experienced journalists, and he brought up this issue of extra tank. And he said Ferrari did the same thing in the Schumacher days. And I asked him how come it was never came out. He said because you cannot come out with things that you cannot prove. And he gave me the reference to Schumacher setting fastest time in Hungary. Remember, he was given a radio signal by Mr. Braun, and you have so many laps to put in, gain so many laps, and he had no problem. But I don't know what the truth is, man. But the ghost of Goshen is everywhere in Formula One, and I guess in other fields also.
Exactly. So, but that's cool. I understand these things, Nasser.
You are machismo, Mr. Rogers.
Thank you. So, speaking of machismo, I want to thank everybody who listens to this program. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
When I was just a lad of 10, my father said to me, come here and take a lesson from a lovely lemon tree. Don't put your faith in love, my boy, my father said to me. I fear you'll find that love is like the lovely lemon tree. Lemon tree, very pretty, and the lemon flower is sweet. But the fruit of the poor lemon is impossible to eat. Lemon tree, very pretty, and the lemon flower is sweet. But the fruit of the poor lemon is impossible to eat. Beneath the lemon tree one day, my love and I did lie.
girl so sweet that when she smiled, the stars rose in the sky. We passed the summer lost in love beneath the lemon tree. The music of her laughter hid my father's words from me. Lemon tree, very pretty, and the lemon flower is sweet. But the fruit of the poor lemon is impossible to eat. Lemon tree, very pretty, and the lemon flower is sweet. But the fruit of the poor lemon is impossible to eat. Pwee! Pwee! One day she left without a word. She took away the sun. And in the dark she left behind. I knew what she had done. She left me for another. It's a common tale but true. A sadder tale but wiser now. I sing this song to you. Lemon tree,